How y'all doing today? You doing good, Everett? All is well? You ready for school to end? Maybe. You had to get the approval to say that from Mom? Mom's not ready. She's ready to keep you going to school. Well, good morning. I'm glad that you are here. Today we're going to be in the book of Numbers chapter 32. We'll start in 32. We'll end in 34. Which means we've got a lot of reading to do. And so we'll look at these three chapters as one and talking about the idea, the truth that sin will find you out, that Moses speaks to the people there. If you remember what's going on, Numbers, they are headed to the promised land. They get there, they rebel and say, we're not going in. They wander around for 40 years and they're back. On the doorstep, they fought the kings of Midian last week. And they've defeated them. And this week, God is going to talk about how they're going to get in there or who's going to get in there. He reminds them of the journey. And so we're going to talk about that. Israel is not intended to occupy the eastern side of the Jordan River where they are currently camped at. But some men are going to come to him and say, hey, can we stay here? Is this all right with you if we stay here? And we'll see that that what happens after that. They don't want to go into the land of Israel or the land of Canaan, of the promised land, and settle there. But they have a reason, and we'll look at that together. So let's start in chapter 32. We'll read through chapter 34. Don't go to sleep on me. There's lots of names, lots of places, but we're going somewhere. So verse 30, or chapter 32, verse 1. It says, the Reubenites and the Gadites had a very large number of livestock. And when they surveyed the lands of Jazer and Gilead, they saw the region was a good one for livestock. So the Gadites and Reubenites came to Moses, Eleazar the priest, and the leaders of the community and said, the territory of Atharoth, Dibon, Jazer, Nimrah, Heshbon, Eliha, Seban, Nebo, and Beon, which the Lord struck down before the community of Israel. That's what they beat them last week in that war with the Midianites, is what they're referring to. The Lord struck down before the community of Israel is good land for livestock, and your servants own livestock. They said, if we have found favor in your sight, let this land be given to your servants as a possession. Don't make us cross the Jordan. But Moses asked the Gadites and the Reubenites, should your brothers go to war while you stay here? Why are you discouraging the Israelites from crossing into the land the Lord has given them? That's what your fathers did when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. And they went up as far as the Eshcol Valley and saw the land, and they discouraged the Israelites from entering the land the Lord had given them. So the Lord's anger burned that day, and he swore an oath because they did not follow me completely. None of the men 20 years old or more came up from Egypt. We'll see the land I swore to give Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. None except Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and the Kenizzite, and Joshua, son of Nun. They did follow the Lord completely. The Lord's anger burned against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years until the whole generation had done what was evil, or the old generation that had done what was evil in the Lord's sight was gone. And here you, a brood of sinners, stand in your father's place, adding even more to the Lord's burning anger against Israel. If you turn back from following him, he will once again leave this people in the wilderness, and you will destroy all of them. Then they approached him and said, we want to build sheepfolds here for our livestock and cities for our dependents. But we will arm ourselves and be ready to go ahead of the Israelites until we have brought them into their place. Meanwhile, our dependents will remain in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return to our homes until each of the Israelites has taken possession of his inheritance. Yet we will not have an inheritance with them across the Jordan and beyond, because our inheritance will be across the Jordan to the east. Moses replied to them, "If you do this, if you arm yourselves for battle before the Lord, and every one of your armed men crosses the Jordan before the Lord until he has driven his enemies from his presence, and the Lord is subdued before, and the land is subdued before the Lord, afterward you may return and be free from obligation to the Lord and to Israel, and this land will belong to you as a possession before the Lord. But if you don't do this, you will certainly sin against the Lord. Be sure your sin will catch up with you. Build cities for your dependents and folds for your flocks, but do what you have promised." The Gadites and Reubenites answered Moses, "Your servants will do just as my Lord commands. Our little children, wives, livestock, and all our animals will remain here in the cities of Gilead. But your servants are equipped for war before the Lord and will go across to the battle as my Lord orders." So Moses gave orders about them to Eleazar the priest, Joshua son of Nun, and the family leaders of the Israelite tribes. Moses told them, "If the Gadites and Reubenites cross the Jordan with you, every man in battle formation before the Lord, and the land is subdued before you, you are to give them the land of Gilead as a possession. But if they don't go across with you in battle formation, they must accept land in Canaan with you." The Gadites and Reubenites replied, "What the Lord has spoken to your servants is what we will do. We will cross over in battle formation before the Lord into the land of Canaan, but we will keep our hereditary possession across the Jordan." So Moses gave them, the Gadites, Reubenites, and half the tribe of Manasseh, son of Joseph, the kingdom of Sihon, king of the Amorites, and the kingdom of Og, king of Bashan, the land including its cities and territories surrounding them. The Gadites built Dibon, Atharoth, Aroer, Aroth, Sophan, Jazer, Jogbehah, Beit Niram, and Beit Haran as fortified cities, and built sheepfolds. The Reubenites built Heshbon, Eliehah, Carithaim, as well as Nebo and Baal Meon, whose names were changed, and Sibma. They gave names to the cities they rebuilt. The descendants of Machir, son of Manasseh, went to Gilead, captured it, and drove out the Amorites who were there. So Moses gave Gilead to the clan of Machir, son of Manasseh, and they built in it. They settled in it. Jair, a descendant of Manasseh, went and captured their villages, which he renamed Jairah's villages. Nobah went and captured Kinnereth with its villages and named it Nobah after his own name. Chapter 33. These are the stages of the Israelites' journey when they went out of the land of Egypt by their military divisions under the leadership of Moses and Aaron. At the Lord's command, Moses wrote down the starting points for the stages of the journey. These are the stages listed by their starting points. They departed from Ramses in the first month on the 15th day of the month. On the day after the Passover, the Israelites went out triumphantly in the sight of all the Egyptians. Meanwhile, the Egyptians were burying every firstborn male the Lord had struck down among them, for the Lord had executed judgment against their gods. The Israelites departed from Ramses and camped at Succoth. They departed from Succoth and camped at Ethron, which is on the edge of the wilderness. They departed from Ethron and turned back to Pi Harithah, which faces Baal Zephon, and they camped near Migdol. They departed from Pi Harith and crossed through the middle of the sea into the wilderness. They took a three-day journey into the wilderness of Ethrim and camped at Marah. They departed from Marah and came to Elim. There were 12 springs of water and 70 date palms at Elim, so they camped there. They departed from Elim and camped by the Red Sea. They departed from the Red Sea and camped by the wilderness of Zin. They departed from the wilderness of Zin and camped in Dophka. They departed from Dophka and camped in Alush. And they departed from Alush and camped at Rephidim, where there was no water for the people to drink. They departed from Rephidim and camped in the wilderness of Sinai. They departed from the wilderness of Sinai and camped at Kerith Havoth. They departed from Kerith Hattaavah and camped in Hazeroth. They departed from Hazeroth and camped in Rithmah. They departed from Rithmah and camped at Rimmon Perez. They departed from Rimmon Perez and camped at Libna. They departed from Libna and camped at Risa. They departed from Risa and camped at Kelahoth. They departed from Kelahotha and camped at Mount Sephor. They departed from Mount Sephor and camped at Hadorah. They departed from Hadorah and camped at Makahoth. They departed from Makahoth and camped at Tahath. They departed from Tahath and camped at Terah. They departed from Kera and camped at Mikdah. They departed from Mikdah and camped at Hashmanah. They departed from Hashmanah and camped at Meseroth. They departed from Meseroth and camped at Bnei Ja'akan. They departed from Ja'akan and camped at Hor Hagigadad. That's a lot of D's and G's. They departed from Hor Hagigadad and camped at Jobathan. They departed from Jobathan and camped at Abaron. They departed from Abaron and camped at Eleazar Gera or Geber. They departed from Ezion Geber and camped in the wilderness of Zin, that is Kadesh. They departed from Kadesh and camped at Mount Hor on the edge of the land of Edom. At the Lord's command, Aaron the priest climbed Mount Hor and died there on the first day of the fifth month in the 40th year after the Israelites went out of the land of Egypt. Aaron was 123 years old when he died on Mount Hor, and at the time the Canaanite king of Arad, who lived in the Negev in the land of Canaan, heard the Israelites were coming. They departed from Mount Hor and camped at Zomanah. They departed from Zomanah and camped at Punan. They departed from Punan and camped at Obeth. They departed from Obeth and camped at Ari Abarim on the border of Moab. They departed from Eom and camped at Dibon Gad. They departed from Dibon Gad and camped at Alion, the Balathium. They departed from Almon, the Balathium, and camped in the Aram range facing Nebo. They departed from the Aram range and camped at the plains of Moab by the Jordan across from Jericho. They camped by the Jordan from Beth Jeshmeoth to the Akakia meadow on the plains of Moab. The Lord spoke to Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan across from Jericho. Tell the Israelites, when you cross the Jordan to the land of Canaan, you must drive out all the inhabitants of the land before you, destroy all their stone images and cast images, and demolish all their high places. You are to take possession of the land and settle in it, because I have given you the land to possess. You are to receive the land as an inheritance by lot according to your clans. Increase the inheritance for a larger clan and decrease it for a small one. Whatever place the lot indicates for someone will be his. You will receive an inheritance according to your ancestral tribes. But if you don't drive out the inhabitants of the land before you, those you allow to remain will become thorns in your eyes, as as in your sides. They will harass you in the land where you will live. And what I had planned to do to them, I will do to you. Chapter 34. The Lord spoke to Moses, command the Israelites and say to them, when you enter the land of Canaan, it will be allotted to you as an inheritance with these borders. Your southern side will be the wilderness of Zin according to the boundary of Edom. Your southern border on the east will begin on the east end of the Dead Sea. Your border will turn south of the ascent of Akrabim, proceed to Zin, and end south of Kadesh Barnea. It will go to Hazor Adar and proceed to Azram. The border will turn from Azram to the brook of Egypt, where it will end at the Mediterranean Sea. Your western border will be on the coastline of the Mediterranean Sea. This will be your western border. This will be your northern border. From the Mediterranean, draw a line to Mount Hor. From Mount Hor, draw a line to the entrance of Hamath, and the border will reach Zedad. Then the border will go to Zephron and end at Hazrin. This will be your northern border. For the eastern border, draw a line from Hazrin in there to Shephem. The border will go down from Shephem to Rabin east of Ain. It will continue down and reach the eastern slope of the Sea of Cherithim. Then the border will go down the Jordan and end at the Dead Sea. This will be the land defined by your borders on all sides. So Moses commanded the Israelites, this is the land you are to receive by lot as an inheritance, which the Lord commanded to be given to the 9.5 tribes. For the tribe of the Reubenites and the tribe of the Gadites have received their inheritance according to their ancestral houses, and half of the tribe of Manasseh has received its inheritance. The 2.5 tribes have received their inheritance across the Jordan from Jericho, eastward toward the sunrise. Then the Lord spoke to Moses. These are the names of the men who will distribute the land as an inheritance for you. Eleazar the priest and Joshua son of Nun. Take one leader from each of the tribe to distribute the land. These are the names of the men. Caleb son of Jephunneh. From the tribe of Judah. Shemuel, son of Abinahud, from the tribe of Simeon. Eladad, son of Kishlon, from the tribe of Benjamin. Bukik, son of Jogli, a leader from the tribe of Dan. From the sons of Joseph, Hananiah, son of Ephod, a leader from the tribe of Manasseh. Kemuel, son of Shiftan, a leader from the tribe of Ephraim. Eli Zaphan, son of Pornak, a leader from the tribe of Zebulun. Pedaliah, son of Azran, a leader from the tribe of Issachar. Elihud, son of Shimeli, a leader of the tribe of Asher. Padel, son of Aminahud, a leader of the tribe of Naphtali. These are the ones the Lord commanded to distribute the inheritance to the Israelites in the land of Canaan. You made it. So what is the point of all of this? There's two truths I want to pull out of the text. The first truth is when Moses is talking about the idea that your sin will follow you. Your sin will follow you. You remember about 15 minutes ago when I started reading? What happened is these two tribes, the Gadites, the tribe of Gad and the tribe of Reuben, the Reubenites, they are people who have lots of flocks. They have lots of goats and sheep, and they are in an area that is plush and is full of grass, and they're like, hey, this is a good place for us to feed our animals. It's good cattle country. It's good land for our ranch. And so they say, hey, Moses, can we stay here on the eastern side of the Jordan River instead of going in to the promised land? Can we stay here and settle this country and take over all of these cities that we've just won? And Moses hits the fan. He's like, are you serious? What in the world? And Moses is having flashbacks. He's having PTSD of when their fathers 40 years earlier had got to the cities and saw that they were good, but they had giants, and like, hey, let's not go in the land. And so Moses is having these flashbacks and saying, you bunch of filthy animals, you bunch of useless people who want to just stay here and not go in the land and fight. You want to settle here and you want to discourage the people from going into the promised land. And the people from Reuben and the people from Gad are like, whoa, 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 whoa. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is the land is good for our sheep. We want to build cities. We want to build some pens and for our animals. And what we're going to do is we're going to leave our women and our children and our animals here, and we're going to go fight with you, and we're going to go fight with Israel. As a matter of fact, they even say, hey, we'll be in the front leading the way. We'll go fight with the rest of Israel so that they have an inheritance as well. But we want to stay. We want to live here on this side because the land's good for our sheep. And Moses says, oh, okay. But if you don't go in, God will come back and God will deal with your sin. Moses approves the plan provided that they do come and fight. So he grants to Reuben and to Gad and to, by the time we get to the half of the tribe of Manasseh, the east side of the Jordan. He says, okay, you can live here. You can come back and settle as long as you come and fight. If you don't come and fight, this land is not yours. Well, the more we read, the more we get down into the story, we find that in the book of Joshua, that it's the conquest where they go into the land of Israel and they go and they fight and defeat all these cities, that the tribes of Reuben and Gad actually do keep their word. They keep what they're going to, they keep the, well, they keep their word. They do what they say they're going to do. And they go in and they fight along with their brothers and take the land for God. And Moses warns them, though. He makes it very clear, you better be faithful. If you're unfaithful, your sin will find you out. Your sin will follow you. If they sin against their brothers, in reality, they're not just sinning against their brothers, but they're sinning against God. And that's what it is today as well. We don't just sin against someone. We don't just sin against a friend. We don't sin against our spouse. We don't sin against our children. We don't sin against another human. In reality, we're sinning against God, which makes it infinitely worse. And our consequences for that are tied to our sin. There's no such thing as a victimless sin. There's no such thing as a victimless crime. There is some sort of consequence that comes with that. And if they do sin, sin will inevitably boomerang back, and there will be evil results. We have phrases similar to this. We say something like, your chickens will come home to roost. Or we'll say something like, what goes around comes around. Or we'll say something like, every dog has its day. Right? These are phrases that saying eventually what's going to happen is it's going to come back on you. Your sin will come back on you and it will find you out. There will be consequences to what you do. Hinduism has this idea of karma, which is the same idea as this. Now, we don't believe in karma. We believe in consequences to sin. But the idea of karma says that whatever you do bad will come back bad on you. And that's what Jesus is saying, or that's what God is saying here many years before Hindus ever talked about karma, is that your sin will find you out. it will come back on you. What goes around comes around. God holds people accountable. Consequences come because of our actions. And God extends this to all of Israel. He says, hey, the consequences are not just if the Gadites or Reubenites don't go in, but when you guys go into the land of Canaan, if you don't get rid of the people, if you don't push them out, if you don't get rid of them and crush their idols and get rid of their high places and their place of false worship, if you don't do that, you are going to be tied to their culture and their sin. And the same thing happens with us. When we get in relationships with people, not just relationships like boyfriend, girlfriend, or spouse, but I mean any type of relationship, friend relationship, working relationship, when we tie ourselves to people, we're also tying ourselves to their culture. We tie ourselves to their sin often. You ever notice when you're around someone and you begin to pick up their phrases? Their phraseology, if they say something over and over and over again, you begin saying that yourself. I know I've done that in my life. I catch myself repeating a phrase that a friend starts to say often. And I make it part of who I am as well. And that's not necessarily sin, but it illustrates the fact that when someone we are in close proximity with, we develop and we take hold to their culture. And if their culture is a culture of sin and a culture of rebellion, then we oftentimes are partner to that, and we are oftentimes privy to that, and we oftentimes take that on as part of our life, where we begin to act the way they act and sin the way they sin. And God is saying, hey, you need to root out this sin in your life. You need to make sure that you're not around people that do that. You need to make sure that you don't take on this culture and you don't take on this sin. And so make sure that when you bind yourself to someone in a relationship, work relationship, friend relationship, spouse relationship, that you recognize that you are binding yourself to all of them, and you have to watch out for sin. Last week we talked about the war that they had, and they had to root out and annihilate, and we have to root out and annihilate the sin that's in our life. That includes when we bind ourselves to someone. The second thing I want us to see is that God cares about the journey. We read a lot of names there. We read a lot of place names. And what happens is Moses in chapter 34 or 33 begins talking about, and he goes through 40 different places of where they camped and where they stayed. And some of these places have shown up before in Numbers and in the book of Exodus. And we've seen them be there. Like, for example, in Exodus, we see them go out of Egypt, out of these cities, and we see them end up in places like Mount Sinai. So these names are familiar to us. We have backstories of this. But there are several names of places where there is no backstory. There is no big event that happens there. There are some where, hey, there was no water there. Or, hey, we camped here because they had lots of fruit and lots of water. But most of these places, or many of these places, are places that don't have this elaborate story that goes with them. They're just mentioned here for the first time. So the text is telling us, or is teaching us, that God is leading Israel through all of these places. And that as God has led them to the important or the big places like Mount Sinai, or the place that had all the fruit, or the place that where they finally found water in the desert, that while God led them to there, he also led them into the places that don't have the big stories and all of the glam and glory. That God is there in the mundane. That God is there in the journey. That God cares about the everyday life stuff. The waking up and getting ready and going to work, coming home, taking care of your family, or if you don't have to go to work, you can stay home and take care of your family. God cares about the everyday, mundane things that we do. That everything that we do has purpose. That everything that we do is part of God's plan. So much so that God cares not only about the different places, but in chapter 34, he says, let's set up the borders. And he puts the borders of Israel and describes where they're going to be and what they're going to look like. And then he gives us the leaders who will be in charge of the inheritance. Each of these places stood as a testimony to God's faithfulness and his faithfulness in keeping Israel and taking care of Israel and watching over Israel. And we remember God's faithfulness along the way in our life. One of the major ways that they remembered God's faithfulness and major events in the life of the Old Testament Israel was that they would have these standing stones. And it's translated Ebenezer, two different words there. Standing stones. Some of them were piles of rock. Some of them were really, really big stones. At Gezer, which is a place in Israel, there's this huge, huge stone set up where they're probably almost as tall as our ceiling. Maybe not quite that tall, but they're big. At least halfway there. They're huge. And the purpose of them was that when people passed by, they would say, why is that stone standing up? Because there's no way it got that way by itself. Somebody stood that stone up. And he would give an opportunity for the older generation who knew the story to tell the story of what happened there. And we need to set up these standing stones, these Ebenezers in our life, these spiritual markers, these spiritual highlights of what's going on, where God, number one, where he saved you. Where maybe you got baptized would be another standing stone where you began to learn and you began to learn God's faithfulness and you see God's faithfulness in your life and you begin to learn about who he is and you begin to have these different highlights throughout your life, these spiritual experiences and these spiritual standing stones where you became more faithful to God because you recognized he was faithful to you. Not just in the big events, but in the mundane of life. Some of the places, like I said, are mentioned here for the first time. We don't have any backstory to them, but God was in those places as well. He was in the mundane. He was in the little things. He was in the daily lives of Israel. And he's concerned about the daily life of you and I. God is faithful in the little things. As much as he's faithful of the big things, he's faithful in the mundane, as much as he's faithful in the large life experiences. So as we come to a close, as we think about this passage, we think about, one, the fact that God cares about who we put ourselves with, who we tie ourselves with, that it matters. He cares that our sins comes with consequences. He warns Israel and he warns us that sin will find you out. It will come back on you. This is not karma. This is how God set up the world. And he also reminds us that he is there in the mundane every day, going to work, going to the store, taking care of your family. Mundane things of life. As Chris plays, I'm going to give you an opportunity to respond to that, to respond to God. Maybe you need to spend some time asking for forgiveness of sin. Maybe you need to thank God for being faithful in the everyday things and asking him to help you to be faithful in the mundane of life. spend some time in prayer. Father, we thank you that you are in the little things as much as you are in the big things. That you have been faithful in the little and you've been faithful in the great. I pray that we would be faithful in those ways as well. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.